It's our pleasure to welcome back to the show filmmaker Abby Ginsberg. She has a new documentary entitled Labors of Love, The Life and Legacy of Henrietta Zold. And this will be appearing tomorrow at the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival at noon at the Jewish Community Center, and on the 29th at the Piedmont Theater in Oakland as well. Abby, welcome back to the show. And I always think it's important when somebody is not more well-known than they should be. But Henrietta Zold is one of the most influential, not just American Jewish women of all time, but just regardless of her religion, of her time, so much so that I know that when she passed away in Israel, that day is now Mother's Day in Israel. I mean, this is a person that had a huge impact, didn't she?
She absolutely did, and I was concerned that she wasn't better known, which is sort of the genesis of the film. Let me just make one small correction. The film will show at 11:30 tomorrow at the Jewish Film Festival at the San Francisco Jewish Community Center. So it's at 11:30, not at noon, or you'll miss the first half hour of the film. We don't want people to do that. So I felt like her story, exactly for what you said, that she was so, she made such a dramatic impact, and we're now, you know, she died in 1945, so we're 80 years away from her death. And if you say, for example, in Israel, if you say to somebody, you know, I'm making a film about Henrietta Zold, they say, oh, really? Is that the street? You know, so she's known in Israel for the name of a big boulevard in Jerusalem, and she's known in the United States, if she is known at all, as the founder of Hadassah, the women's service organization. But as you said in your introduction, she did so much more. People do not know that she saved over 10,000, you know, German Jewish youth from the Holocaust, kids who she managed to kind of get their passage to Palestine at the time. They never saw their parents again because the parents all died in the Holocaust. It's like, people need to know this. She was also responsible, and today you see the impact of this in Israel. In Palestine, when she first went there in 1909, people were literally dying on the streets. I mean, there were infestations of flies that were causing blindness called trachoma. Healthcare didn't exist. And part of her contribution was trying to figure out how to bring, you know, sort of some lessons from American public health over to Palestine, and she almost single-handedly did that. She brought the first two nurses over there, you know, she ended up bringing a medical unit over there, and she ended up helping to create the infrastructure, first in Palestine and now today in, you know, modern-day Israel, that enables both Arabs and Jews who live in Israel. This does not obviously deal with Gaza or the West Bank, but if you live in Israel, and you are a resident of Israel, you can be treated at a Hadassah hospital with absolutely no discrimination about, you know, whether you're Jewish or Arab. And that's huge, especially in a country that is so divided and such a mess right now. So you walk into one of these Hadassah hospitals and you sort of feel her long-term influence, and I ended up very proud of her. So I'm with you. I think this is a story that should be better known. And, you know, it's not unlike a lot of women who've been lost to history. And I was thinking about who else can we talk about? Well, when they did the film Hidden Figures, did we know that there were any black women who'd been involved in the first space flights? No. You know, this is not a country that really honors its women, I don't know, important original thinkers, et cetera. So this fits into a long string of people who have been lost to history, and she was somebody I thought I could bring back a little bit. And so here, you know, here's the film.
It's an amazing span of her lifetime. I mean, born in Baltimore a year before the Civil War even begins, and as you mentioned, lives all the way until 1945. What was it like, especially in some of the more orthodox Jewish situations, that women did not have the same rights to what they could read and temple and things like that, and how she kind of tried to break through that?
So it was, I mean, I think because she was the daughter of a rabbi, I mean, there's no question, her father was a Hungarian immigrant who was a rabbi. He had come to Baltimore to be a rabbi at a place called Oheb Shalom. And because she was his oldest daughter, and in many ways he treated her as his assistant, she ended up learning Hebrew, learning to speak German. She ended up with a lot of skills that would enable her to to really become an intellectual down the road. And early in her life, you know, she kind of was her father's right-hand person, as we say in the film, and that immediately took her out of, you know, the typical path for young women at that time, which was to find a husband, marry him, and cook and clean for him for the rest of their lives. So the fact that she never, you know, the fact that she didn't get married young and she was out there trying to make a difference in the world, I, in the film, give her a tremendous amount of credit for creating something called the Russian Night School, which we see has all the elements of later ESL, English as a Second Language, classes. You know, not everybody would have had the moxie to say, oh, we've got a problem. Russian immigrants need to learn English. What am I going to do to make this better? And she creates the Russian Night School to teach Russian immigrants English. And moving on into kind of the rest of it, it's like, there, you know, we also say in the film that she was the editor, basically, of something called the Jewish Publication Society, bringing Jewish books to an American audience, making sure they got translated, making sure they got out there, making sure people knew about them. She was always called the secretary. When she decided she wanted to go get better, more training at the Jewish Theological Seminary, she had to promise not to try to become a rabbi. And as we say in the film, she didn't want to become a rabbi. But the fact that she had to promise in writing that she wouldn't become a rabbi is crazy. So it was a very tough time for women in general. It was a particularly tough time within an Orthodox community that really did not see women as having a role in the world, you know, but rather had a role in the home. And here was Henrietta kind of navigating without any, you know, without any footsteps ahead of her. She had no path to follow, so she was really kind of blazing her own trail. And she did it, you know, for 85 years. I mean, there was nobody who she could really look, I mean, she could learn some things from people in the public health world like Jane Addams or Charlotte Perkins Gilman in the United States, who are part of the progressive movement. But there wasn't anybody who was like living in a foreign country like she was in Palestine, you know, and trying to put her finger in the dike around all the people who were being displaced and killed through the Holocaust. You know, there was nobody for her to follow. And so she really created the template for others who came after her. But she was a complete trailblazer without role models. And as you say, sort of when you think about the times in which she did this, it's even more remarkable. What she did would be remarkable today. But given that she did it in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, makes it even more astounding. Because one of the things I say in the film, let me just say one more thing, is that, you know, I say she never saw a problem that she didn't think was her duty to solve. Well, most of us don't go through life thinking that way. If we see a problem, we throw up our hands, we whine about it, we say this is terrible, you know, but we don't take it upon ourselves to say, what am I going to do to fix it? She always took it upon herself to say, what am I going to do to fix it? So it's that's what really makes her most remarkable to me.
Can you get a sense of, you know, all she did to break through, you know, as you said, the theological seminary, and they were so afraid a woman might want to be a rabbi, and she said, look, I'm not going to try and be a rabbi, I just want to study. You think about all the groundbreaking things she did, and yet, when she died, it was, we still were in the Holocaust. I mean, it was right near the end. And you could think of like the height of anti-Semitism taken to a industrial murderous machine that it was in. Do you get a sense of her, was it a melancholy, or was it a kind of thing that she was going to fight even harder? I mean, how did it go at that, all the things that she broke through, and then she died at the height of anti-Semitism?
Well, I mean, I think she never felt like she had accomplished enough. I think that's part of what drove her, you know, was there was some inner discontent that she lived with her entire life about, you know, yes, I've done X, but I should have also done Y. And so she was, I mean, when you read her letters, you really get a sense that this was a woman who did not really have the capacity to pat herself on the back. And so she died, she died in February of 45. The war ends in May of 45. But you know, the United States was always terrible on what they were going to do about the displacement of Jews and others through, as a result of the war. So I think she would have said that she felt sad that she hadn't done more, but she would also have had to admit, if you were interviewing her, that she worked hard every day, you know, to combat anti-Semitism and the displacement of, you know, thousands of particularly young people. I mean, she was the person who was the intermediary between people. We show this with the Tehran children. There were children who were displaced from Poland. And they literally, it was like wandering in the desert, except they were wandering through Siberia and Uzbekistan and all kinds of crazy places. And eventually the Jewish agency starts to kind of put them together to bring them to Palestine. But the person who had to facilitate their entry into Palestine was Henrietta. And that happened in 1943. So she's 83 years old. She's not really very well. And she's got a whole new batch of people, many of whom are under the age of 10, who she has to find placements for and places to have them live and ways to feed and clothe them. I mean, I think the question you're asking is like, things were so overwhelming. You know, did she ever feel like she'd done enough? And the answer to that is no. But in part, it was because she was engaged in the struggle of trying to make a difference that she kept seeing all the, you know, all the visas she couldn't get, all the kids she couldn't take care of. You know what I mean? She always, it's not even that she saw the glass as half empty. She saw her work as never really being completed. Because, of course, she died before, you know, before you could even argue that she had made a huge difference. So I think, yeah.
I'm sorry, just wrapping it up. The film, I want to make sure everybody hears once again the title, Labors of Love, The Life and Legacy of Henrietta Zold. It'll be making its world premiere at the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. Jewish Community Center in San Francisco, and then over here on Piedmont Ave at the Landmark Piedmont Theater at 1 p.m. on the 29th. And we have been speaking with filmmaker Abby Ginsberg. Abby, it's an extraordinary story of an incredible life, and congratulations on putting it on film.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for the chance to talk about it.